UGA preview, as this is the Impact Media End Zone, the SEC.
Like I said, UGA Bulldogs preview. I'm your host, Jeremy York. I'm joined once again by Mr. Joe Pym. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Doing pretty good. Dodging some of these awesome storms that are so far being nice to us.
It's finally August again.
It is. It's almost football weather.
Yeah.
And, you know, what a... I was trying to think of a good way to start in this discussion, and one of the manuscripts in front of me here has the five words that are a good starting point. Funny how things work out. It's real damn funny how things work out for the UGA Bulldogs, and that's not always good. Sometimes it's bad. You know, we could go back to that Auburn play last year that kind of helped start their run. But, you know, let's stay on the positive side that these aren't the same Bulldogs as last year. Sure, they may have some of the same people in the same positions, but they got a different direction and game plan this year.
Well, that's not necessarily a bad thing.
No, not at all.
They got them to 8-5 last year.
Right. I mean, and a lot of people said they had a down year. To which, yeah, they were 8-5, and they were 5-3 in their division. But you know, LSU also had three losses in the SEC as well.
Yeah, but one of those losses is to Vandy.
Which,
and I know Vandy reached their mountaintop last year.
Yes, they hit the ceiling.
That's as high as you're going to go, and that's why James Franklin left. I really won't fault him at all for that. He had to, you know, go do what was best for him and his family.
Right.
But you can't lose to Vanderbilt. That's the second time that Mark Richt has lost to Vanderbilt.
Well, you know,
both times he lost to Vanderbilt, Georgia had double-digit leads in both of those games. And this, I might be jumping ahead of where we're going with this show. The key to holding a double-digit lead is what? When you have the ball, what do you do with it?
I would say run the clock.
Run the clock.
Yeah. And that's not necessarily run the ball all the time. That's quick little dump passes, make sure the clock always moves.
Right. Run the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
Especially with the running back core they have, not even including the freshman this year.
Okay, so I'm actually going to get to that. Last year, I won't go to 2010 when they lost to them? I remember Tony Taylor had a pick six that put them up by 10. Either way, last year, we're looking at their running backs they have available now. Those guys weren't available against Vanderbilt.
That's true. Both of them were.
Gurley didn't play. Marshall didn't play.
I think Marshall was already out at that point, wasn't he?
Yeah, he got blasted against Tennessee. Gurley was out with his high ankle sprain. So, they had Brandon Douglas. I heard the nickname last year, the White Adrian Peterson. Which, you know, maybe that might be as good as the White James Brown. I mean, I don't know how effective that would be at all. You know, he probably might be a manager at UPS.
He could be.
I mean, the White James Brown.
Right, right.
So, and then they had J.J. Green, who's been converted to cornerback this year.
Right.
Those were the guys that were supposed to put the game away. And I know Georgia was really, really good when it came to passing. They were 15th in the country in the passing game last year. But that's not necessarily what wins games. Because you can look at these pass-happy teams scoring 48 a game. They're also giving up 53. So you got to find the balance. And I think that this year, I mean, I'm not saying this is the year, but this year they're poised to where maybe if these, I know it's not likely the same injuries arise, but they have more, not just more depth, but more quality depth.
Right.
To help their new starter. I mean, I know we got a couple starts last year, but, you know, we got a pretty much a green, he's a fifth-year senior, but he's still green. He's got two starts under his belt. At Hudson Mason.
Right.
So, like you say, funny how things work out. Aaron Murray getting hurt last year might have been the best thing for the 2014 version of the Bulldogs. Because
parts of it was. Now, in no way are we saying that it was good that he got hurt, but
the 2014 Bulldogs.
Right. As a condition of him doing that, even Mark Richt hinted towards that as well in saying that at least it gave us a shot to see where Hudson Mason was at. And you know what? He didn't look half bad. I mean, he looked quite good a lot of times.
He had a 20-point comeback
right
in his first start.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, he can throw the ball.
He's got a different trajectory on his throws as well.
He does. They are different style quarterbacks. And since we're on Mason, I was able to reach out to a great buddy of mine who has been in and around UGA football for a good handful of years, especially down in the practices. He's got a better inside look than the rest of us. And I asked him, you know, why is Hudson Mason the guy this year? To which he said, he's the best quarterback on the team, not even close. Now, that could mean good or bad. That could mean he's so good that he's better than everybody else, or everybody else is not good at all,
right,
and he's good. So I made him clarify as to what he was saying, because I caught him in between some engagements he had, and I said, you know, what's he like as a person, a player, that sort of thing. And he said, quote, he is a better pure quarterback than Murray is or was. He has better mechanics, more intangibles that you want a guy leading your team to have. And that was the end of his quote. And to me, that spoke volumes. He's not saying, not only is he a good guy that can give you a ride to practice or something like that, but this guy's got a lot of the unteachable things. And I'm not saying Aaron Murray's a slouch, because Murray's going to be a great NFL quarterback, possibly as soon as this year. But
well, they're just different.
Different styles.
Different breeds.
Right. It's like comparing, I would say Aaron Murray, as far as his accuracy and his deep ball, and in no way are these two related beyond this right now, but he's kind of a Drew Brees style player. He's more about accuracy and throwing passes where he needs to throw them, where Hudson Mason is more about like a Phillip Rivers deep ball.
Right. Well, and I've also actually substantiated reports like you've got. I've heard that they don't move fast enough for Mason.
He's a hurry up.
Georgia, they don't do quite a hurry up.
Right.
It's like Peyton Manning. Get up the line, let's look at it and call the play. But see, what I've heard and also read is that they're not moving fast enough for Mason. Which that means, you know, you hear a lot of guys when they get up to the next level, oh, the game's just so fast, it's hard for me to catch up with. Sounds like the game is
too
slow.
He seems like he's ready. Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, week one, that's going to be, we're going to see.
Yeah.
At least it's not in Clemson.
Although I will have to say, I've seen two games in Clemson. It is a beautiful place, and they've got a really cool field.
I'm talking about from Georgia's perspective.
Right, a great atmosphere. It didn't work out.
What did they do with that rock?
I don't know. Somebody
broke it.
Did they?
Yeah, you remember that? Uh-huh. Broke it in half. Some, like they cleaned it or something, dropped it and broke it. The one they slap, you know the rock.
Yeah, yeah. I've known people to play up there, and I've seen a couple games up there. It's a really cool place. It's not Athens, for sure,
yeah,
but it's a very cool football culture.
Yeah.
If you find yourself up near Clemson, South Carolina, and they're playing a game, go check it out. But by all means, they're not the UGA Bulldogs.
Nah, it's ACC.
Right.
What can I do?
Well, I mean, but they're two different teams. Clearly, if the Bulldogs are your team, you probably don't care at all what's happening in South Carolina. But
I do respect tradition and whatnot. I just don't respect ACC tradition. I shouldn't use the word respect. I don't hold that in high regard.
Right. It's not a priority to you.
No.
It's not part of your weekly checklist.
I laugh when I hear the words ACC and tradition put together. It's almost like an oxymoron.
I can see
that. A tradition of what?
I can see that.
Nonetheless, we're drifting.
We are. But, before we get into the rest of the team, let's get into Mark Richt a little bit. Clearly, there's going to be,
He did the flip.
Since he's in the Atlanta market anyway, there's always going to be the one time he does something bad or that they lose a game, we need to fire this guy, this guy's terrible, blah, blah, blah. And then there's the always, every time he wins a game, oh, that's why we have him here and this, stuff like this. So it's not really a 50-50, it's just that the way the Atlanta market and the Athens market fans are, they're always kind of wishy-washy towards that. And it's not that they're bad fans, because they're going to listen to this. I'm not saying you're bad fans. I'm just saying you have to be patient because it's a long season.
Well, I won't use the word bad fan either.
No, they're not bad fans. They're passionate fans.
I'd like to use the word new fan.
Okay.
Let's see right here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 10-win seasons since he got to Georgia in 2001.
And he's only been there 13 years.
Pretty good percentage.
Yeah, 8 of 13 or 10-win seasons. That's really
a lot of people don't remember Jim Donning, and he had an NFL defense. You go back to look at that 97 defense. NFL deep. That was not NFL caliber defense. That was an NFL defense, and he what with it? Signed a quarterback that went to go play baseball and do a bunch of illicit activities.
I forgot about that guy. His name escapes me now, but I
won't even bring him up because I'll say it.
Yeah,
the way I'll say it will be offensive to some people. But
yeah,
that's who he went and got.
So, just look him up for all you guys. That
so now, let's tie it into Rick.
Okay.
He's had to go up against, let's just say, national championship-wise, since 2001.
Mm-hmm.
We've got 2, 4, 7, just 7, right? 7 national championship winners,
mm-hmm.
and from our conference.
Right.
He wasn't one of them. I shouldn't say our conference, from the conference.
Yeah.
They weren't one of them. But more than 50% of the time, a team from this conference is winning the national championship, and he's still getting 10 wins. Now, I know with the common opponent from the West, it's not always going to match up as you wish.
Well, and if you look also, a lot of those people on their path to take the national championship typically have to go through Georgia at some point.
Yes.
They tend to be, kind of like the Falcons have had this streak a couple years in a row where the eventual Super Bowl champion defeats the Falcons at some point during the season.
Yes.
Like, they're usually one of their last wins or last, losses or something like that, to where UGA kind of has that same mantra about them.
Correct.
Typically, the national title comes through Athens.
Right. And so, Rick, well, I think people getting on Rick, I mean, he's still young from a head coach perspective.
Oh yeah.
I don't know who else. Maybe there'd be a coaching waiting situation with Bobo.
There's nobody better out there right now than Mark Richt for this team.
Well, for this team.
For this team.
There are people
right.
That would come in and.
But it would have to be a 3-year house cleaning of them swapping everything over to their style.
But then it turns into a 5-year house cleaning on recruiting.
Exactly.
But see, I think the move that he made I don't know if he reached out to Pruitt with his FSU ties.
I feel like he did, but. Yeah.
He was OC there for a while.
Yeah.
So maybe he reached out. Maybe that's the way it came about. I doubt he called Georgia.
Well, a lot of people don't realize that, at least from the information I was given, Mark Richt was the OC down at FSU and all that. And he was pretty much going to be groomed to take over. And when this Georgia thing come about, he asked Bowden about it. And Bowden said, if I was you, I would take that. And it's not that I would love you to take over this program. But, A, I don't know how much longer I'm going to play or I'm going to coach. It could be millions of years or it could be tomorrow. But
yeah.
At the same time, this is your chance to really grasp this and take the brass ring. And Rick had said he was leaning towards taking it, but he wanted kind of Bowden's blessing. So when he got it, he took it. And I think he's done well.
I think losing 13-2 to Oklahoma kind of pushed his decision as well. Memorable game for me. That was one of my first big bets I ever made. Nonetheless,
yeah,
that was he was the OC, and they didn't score a point.
Yeah.
So maybe he said, "Before my stock goes any lower."
Yeah, let's push the chips in and go get some nachos before they confiscate all of our money.
Correct. Like I said, he brought in Pruitt, and
he did.
I know that Georgia has some stars on this team before they even touch the ball, but. The main name that I've heard and read about, because I don't talk to these guys.
From our sources.
I don't have the credentials to talk to Jeremy Pruitt.
From our sources.
Correct.
Yeah.
But he's come in, and he's simplified everything for the defense. And I don't know about you, I watched every snap of Georgia last year. And defensively...
I did during a wedding, but
more than 50% of the time before the ball was snapped, the defensive backs were looking at each other with their hands in the air, like, "What do I do?" And you're just set up to fail with that. It's inexcusable. And nothing against Todd.
Yeah,
because they weren't going to fire Todd.
No, they weren't.
Grantham was. He would still be there.
And it's nothing personal to him, but he needed a change of scenery, and Georgia needed a different direction. So I like this move.
Oh, yeah. But they weren't going to let him go, though.
No, they weren't. Same thing with Bobo, because fans are back and forth on him as well.
Yeah.
And from what I hear, the same source I have close to the team like that, he's like, dude, you wouldn't believe how good a coach he
unfairly bashed because of a poor performance by a player.
But they've been consistently in the top 20 in scoring the past. I mean, last year they were 21st. I mean, we're splitting hairs with that.
Right.
But you couple that with being tied for 78th defensively scoring, that doesn't bode well for you at all. That pretty much equals 8-5.
I didn't realize that was that low.
Defensively, they were 41st against the run.
Yeah, I remember some pretty good runners coming against them. So
41st against the run. Offensively, just name one good running back on the team. Let's talk about Todd Gurley, right?
Okay.
Great.
I would have actually said Marshall first, but only because everybody else says Gurley. Gurley is the better of the two now.
Gurley's proven.
Yes.
Gurley's done it.
Had Marshall not gotten hurt, they would have been the most killer 1-2 punch I've seen.
Compare their freshman years to when they didn't get hurt.
Right. They were exciting.
They were, but Gurley's 65%, Marshall's 35%.
Right.
I love Marshall. I want him returning kicks. I want him in the flat catching swing passes. I don't want him up in the middle like Gurley does with the dirty work.
Right.
Nonetheless, they had Gurley last year. They had Marshall for a couple games last year.
Right.
65th in the country in rushing.
And it's not that they're the only two. They're always deep at running back. Running back and linebacker are the two most in-depth places on this team.
So, the defensive scoring, them being 78th in the country, probably led to them being 65th in rushing and 15th in passing.
Right.
Because I think Murray averaged 300 yards a game, might have been 279. It was right around there. So they're constantly not only trying to play catch-up, but with inexperienced guys who were putting the ball on the ground on a regular basis. Brandon Marshall was fumbling at the wrong times. Not that there's ever a right time to fumble, but
they
were putting the ball in the air. So scoring-wise, defensively, they were 45th. Not good. Offensively, they were 17th. So,
okay. If
you look at the offensive numbers, minus the rushing, because they were 65th, that doesn't sound like an 8-5 team. But when you look at the defense, that sounds like an 8-5 team. And that's why I'm really so high on what the new philosophy Jeremy Pruitt is bringing to the team. He's simplifying things, and you have this responsibility, don't worry about the possibilities. Do what's in front of you.
Right.
So, I think we mentioned Todd Gurley a little bit. Last year, banged up leg, 10 rushing touchdowns, 6 receiving touchdowns.
But it's not just the...
He missed 4 games.
The running he does and stuff like that. He has that burst.
He didn't have it last year, though.
No, he didn't. And he saw it
against Florida on that 70-yard pass he ran in. That safety didn't want to tackle him. He just ran next to him.
Yeah.
Gurley didn't leave anybody.
He's probably asking him, what his Madden gamer tag was or something.
But you saw on that play against Clemson, his pretty much only healthy run of the year, 75-yard touchdown. The one Malcolm Mitchell blew his leg out on.
Right.
Jumping up in the air. So, there's a fresh Todd Gurley coming in.
Oh, yes. There's a couple of them from what we hear.
And they found... They found out this guy can catch the ball, too. He had 10 receptions against Auburn.
That's always a plus, because what's the number one complaint as they move away from college is, it's great that you can run and that you're that good, but can you catch a pass out of the backfield?
Yeah, and,
most of them can't.
I just mentioned the huge play he made against Florida.
Yes.
That's reception-wise. Had some great catches and runs against Georgia Tech. I think he had 160 total yards against Tech with 4 touchdowns. When I hear he's 100%, so we'll move to Marshall. I don't know if he's a question mark at all, but he's been playing. He's got, I hesitate to use the word world class speed,
right?
But he's got uncommon speed, and they got to get him in the right spots. I don't doubt that they will. If that knee's not back, I don't want him to push him.
It's true. A lot of sources that we've talked to have talked about redshirting him and letting a couple of the freshman guys they have get some action in because of the explosiveness they are.
And if they do that, that's pretty much saying, we know Gurley's going to the draft. We want you around next year.
Yeah, see, my only fear of redshirting Marshall would be we'd be in a Moreno situation.
Yes.
Because we'll get two good, really good years. Well, I can't count last year as a really good year, but he was dominating LSU after Gurley went out. He was 8 yards a carry.
True.
And so, and, you know, when your knee gets bent backwards, there's nothing you can do.
No, it's not meant to go that
way. But I don't want to see a talent like that come through and only play 14 games, or like Moreno did.
Right.
He only had, I think, 18 to 20 games.
Right.
And because of a red shirt, he was able to leave early. Now, I don't know how likely Marshall will be to leave the team after sitting out an entire year.
I think that would be their way. They may ask him, can we redshirt you knowing that you'll come back next year?
Yeah, but that doesn't mean...
That doesn't mean he does, but...
He could come back bigger, stronger,
yeah,
and say, hey, look, I have plenty of tread left in the tires.
Yeah.
I hadn't carried the ball
in
18
months. Half. Yeah.
So I really... The redshirt is a possible option. I really don't want him to go that way. I'd rather them redshirt one of these new guys coming in, Sony Michel, Nick Chubb. I know that those guys are going to come in and contribute.
See, Chubb's from not very far from where we're at right now,
he's
about 20 minutes.
Cedartown.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Sony Michel, I mean, that's the next wave. I mean, Georgia's turning back into running back U like they used to be when they're rotating Rodney Hampton and Garrison Hurst.
You know, what I call old school football, and there's nothing wrong with old school football. You know why? Because teams like LSU do it and win national titles. Teams like Alabama do it and win national titles. That's how you dominate college. Everybody else is passing. You beat them to death and run the clock out.
Right. I really prefer to see my favorite teams run it 30 times and pass it 30 times. I like a good balance. There's no reason to get all screwy Louie and try to reinvent the wheel. So, to open up this passing game, to open up this running game.
Right.
We got to get a passing game.
Yes, and, you know, luckily, all those guys that were hurt last year are coming back. Except for the few that have been dismissed. And
well, no, we'll talk about Malcolm Mitchell.
Right.
He's hurt. Mm-hmm. He will not play week one unless something screwy Louie happens. Mm-hmm. Justin Scott Wesley, their speedster.
Mm-hmm.
He's hurt. Will not play week one. So, we've got two tall receivers
left.
Very good. We've got Dallas's own Michael Conley,
mm-hmm,
Michael Bennett.
I like Bennett.
Very skilled, very experienced.
Mm-hmm.
They will go get whatever ball you throw them.
Right. Which is not a given with every wide receiver.
No, it's a given with them.
Yes.
Because they're going to go do it.
But not every wide receiver will go get a ball.
No.
Most of the time, if you don't throw it to them, they're not going to catch it.
No, and Conley, he'll go get it all. And, you know, we got, I keep saying William, sorry, the JUCO transfer from last year that I think had 3 or 4 catches, Rumpf.
Right.
He's big.
Yes.
6'5", 208.
I mean, he could almost be converted into tight end or extra lineman and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, he'll have to gain about 80 pounds. But he's got the potential to actually make plays. Because when he played last year, he was pretty much the one big guy available. So if he's able to be a slot or whatnot, he can contribute. Reggie Davis, he set the record for Georgia's longest play ever last
year.
I know it was thrown to him, but still, you score on a 98-yard pass, you have some speed.
Right.
And he that's really what he was brought in for, was the speed. So I think receiver-wise, it looks a little iffy. And I'm sure there's a couple of there's one receiver I haven't spoken about yet. I'll speak about in a little while.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure there's another couple other guys that I'll say, who the heck are they? You know, week two, week three, when they catch a ball for 8 yards on a third down.
Well, technically, since I consider tight end to be just another extension of wide receiver most of the time, I mean, they lost Arthur Lynch, who is in the NFL now, replacing him with Jay Rome. And
that's actually exactly where I was going with
and,
that.
And Jordan Davis, but
Jay Rome will be the key.
Mm-hmm.
He, if you look at how I don't know. I look at football a little differently. No.
Well, I mean, Bobo is going to get him the ball because nobody else is going to think he's getting the ball.
But I'm saying you've got these stud running backs that we just spoke about. Mm-hmm. And we've got Georgia's they do a lot of play action. So that's going to pull those linebackers up. And those wide receivers on the outside with the experience and their length, they're going to keep the safeties and the corners on their heels. So
right.
Jay Rome, he's going to have an opportunity to do something. As long as his feet, as long as he don't park that foot again, keep that foot, you know, whatever you got to do, whatever ice bucket challenge you got to take care of every day, fine. Now, they were talking about switching Quavon Hicks from fullback to tight end.
Right.
That was the early experiment.
Yeah.
But with Merritt Hall getting dismissed from the team, and I'm not trying to say he was dismissed. He was declared medically ineligible.
Right.
Too many concussions. So, Quavon's going back.
I hate for people to get injured, and I think he's making the right life choice right there.
It's not his choice, though. Doctors said no.
Well, I mean, at the same time, I'm glad that somebody told this kid, you don't want to push that.
No, he wouldn't say no. So that's going to move Quavon back to fullback. And, you know, since I've watched Rick at Georgia, 2 to 3 times a year, that fullback makes a play. Now, it was a lot more when Brandon Sutherland was there, and he was leading the team in touchdowns. But 2 or 3 times a year, the fullback makes one of those big plays.
True.
And he made a big, big, big play against Clemson. They didn't win the game, but his first carry of the year, he had a 45-yard run. Now, if you want to couple that with him having 10 total carries for the year for 75 yards, you can go ahead.
Yeah.
You can add that, too. But his first carry of the year, he made that big play, and that could have been a difference maker.
But the fullback is not a featured runner in this scheme.
No, but
he is a blocker. Now he's a great, you know, B or C option like they used him like that, and it was great that he had that breakout run, but that's why his numbers were only 75 yards, because he's not the featured performer.
But I'm just saying, that's 2 to 3 times a year.
Right.
So you should say 60 plays a game, roughly.
Right.
600 plays a year, give or take. There's going to be those couple plays. It might even be a middle screen to where he just turns around. That's what they used to do with Sutherland when he was leading the team in touchdowns and scoring.
But honestly, just to hit the offensive line real quickly, I think Colton Houston at right tackle is the only kind of question mark, and I don't even question him that much. I think this is going to be a pretty good offensive line.
Well, heck, he has fought so hard
I know.
To even get eligible that, you know, I think he's really excited for the chance without even having to worry about it.
In case he doesn't make it, I think they're okay at the position where, you know, I don't think offensive line's going to be that big of an issue.
No, Theus is going to dominate like he's supposed to have been dominating this year. There is I've gotten no evidence to lead me to that except for my gut. But Theus is a beast. He's been doing well. He hasn't really got whooped.
Yes.
He ain't got to play Clowney this year.
He's very happy about that.
Well, I'm sure everybody
is. I mean, yeah, you want to go against the top talent, but, man, Clowney wear you out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you wear him out, watch him stand there and not hustle on a play.
Right.
But then, that's how he thinks you to sleep. It's the rope-a-dope, like Muhammad used to do.
He's a gamer.
Yeah.
When it comes time to play, he plays.
Yes.
When it comes time to practice, he didn't care.
That's right. But, I mean, they've got size. We got Xavier Ward, 6'7", 280. And Theus, 6'6", 290. Well, he's 300. Greg Pike, 6'6", 330.
Well, what I like to say, I can't remember exactly where I got the saying, but he's a biscuit shy 300, yeah.
Yes. Colton, like you just mentioned, 6'5", 280.
I mean, they've got size, and these guys can actually move.
And I didn't even mention Quavon Hicks, who I just spoke about. He's 6'2", 260.
And these are big guys.
That's your fullback. I mean, this is why the SEC is different.
It is.
Because you can get down to third and fourth string and keep looking at these guys. I'll just put my finger on an O-lineman right here. Alden Bynum, 6'5", 275, redshirt freshman. I've never even heard of the guy, and I follow the team closely. Let's put my finger on another one. Zach DeBell, 6'6", 275,
yep.
Junior. Never heard of him. So they're building this depth.
They're
Watts Dantzler, 6'7", 307.
Yep.
Now I know how.
Now he could actually, he could actually back up Houston at right tackle or take the spot if he doesn't make it.
Right. I think last year Houston was in a bad position with him doing his game day segments.
Yeah.
You know, because they did stories about him. So that's, I hate to use the word distraction, but
it can be.
It wasn't normal.
Right.
So I think J-Rome is one of the biggest keys. Losing Merritt Hall hurts. He wasn't going to contribute a lot of yards, but he knew what to do. He didn't really have to think twice about it. Their second leading rusher has been converted to cornerback, J.J. Green, but I think we've established that they're okay at running back. I think they're going
to
get their yards.
That's something you like to hear, is that I'm so deep at this position that I can now attempt to fix another hole in the boat I have.
Well, now he was... J.J. was recruited as... He was top 30 cornerback out of high school.
But
so
his speed and agility, they wanted to try him at running back. And he's quite good at running back, but...
He's just... You know, he's not 6'2".
Right.
He's not as tall as Richard Sherman.
Right.
I guess we all aren't as tall as Richard Sherman, but
now,
that's...
I will hang on to my 6'6", 6'1" status, but yeah, I'm no Richard Sherman.
Yeah. So they returned 6 starters on offense. I have written down here they returned 9 starters on defense. That's faulty information. Because where I saw that was they had a couple fellas that are going to be playing for Louisville that were on that. So I can't talk. I'm not going to speak on the returning starters. And I really would. It'd be better if they had 0 returning starters, because
I don't know.
Other than the linebackers,
they were guilty to me of they are very deep in talent in a lot of areas. I mean,
yes.
It's not that they're weak in other areas for the most part. They're very deep. But learning to play together and play consistently has been kind of an issue in the past couple years.
Right.
And I feel like most of these guys got to at least be on the field at the same time, learn the tendencies of the guys in front of you, behind you, beside you. They're going to be better.
Right. And, you know, I'm speaking on the defense now. They've got the best linebacker core, some say, in the country. You've got the top 2 tacklers from the conference.
Between them and LSU, I would give the nod probably to UGA. Wasn't the LSU that had all the linebackers?
South Carolina.
That's the
one we recently discussed.
Okay.
I believe South Carolina was ranked 3rd.
Well, I knew, regardless, SEC is known.
Well, I mean, Leonard Floyd, he's, it's kind of hard to describe who he's like. I mean, 6'5", 230.
He's kind of carving out his own place.
Right. I mean, you want to call him DeMarcus Ware, but DeMarcus Ware was 270.
Right.
You want to call him Javon Kurse, but Javon Kurse was 6'7", 270.
Well, and of all those returning starters, that's 4 of them are the linebackers.
Oh, yes, and those, Ramit Wilson, All-American. Jordan Jenkins had a down year last year, but a down year to where I think he had 6.5 sacks.
Yeah, but on this scheme, I mean, when you run 3 up front, 4 linebackers, the 3 up front are supposed to command,
right,
are supposed to take out the 5 offensive linemen to leave whichever linebackers are coming open for that spot. So you can look and go, well, he had a down year at that. Well, was it because they didn't get enough pressure up front, or maybe he didn't blitz enough? He wasn't blitzed enough.
I think they called it a down year because he was following Jarvis Jones and what he did.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not going to have that kind of output from a linebacker every year. I think if you would have just come in with that, well, you know, Jarvis Jones might have left 5 years earlier, they wouldn't have called that a down year.
5 years earlier?
Yeah.
If Jarvis Jones were left 5 years earlier?
Yeah, it was a distant memory.
Oh, okay.
And no one was thinking, oh,
I thought you were saying if he, like, left before he got there, and I was like, yeah, that would have really benefited him.
No.
I was like, wow.
No, I'm saying...
Yeah, Jarvis, we don't want you here.
No.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, if he was a distant memory, people weren't thinking, oh, he's the next Jarvis Jones, he's stepping around. No, he's the next Jordan Jenkins. He's got...
That whole sports debate, and I think I've said it on some of these before, maybe even one of the SEC ones, we have to stop saying he's the next this, she's the next that. We need to go, everybody's different. LeBron's not the next Jordan. He's the best LeBron he could be. We look here, you know, and we say, is Jordan Jenkins the next Alec Ogletree? No, Alex Ogletree is the next Alec Ogletree. Jordan Jenkins is the next Jordan Jenkins.
Yeah.
He can play like him. He can put up numbers like him, but he's still a different person. Even identical twins are slightly different.
Yeah, and Marlo Herrera, I mean, he's just been, he's done everything he's needed to do since he's been there. I mean, there's really no way
And if we're going to talk about potential NFL stars or stars of this defense, even though he kind of had an interesting year as well, we got to talk about Damian Swan.
That is not a, I won't use the word sore subject, and I was going to bring this up earlier when you mentioned the Auburn game, how it was a fluky pass. If Georgia wins that game, they're 8-4, or 9-4 rather. What does that mean in the grand scheme of things? Nothing.
No, it wouldn't have mattered.
So
I was trying to think if that put them in the game, and that wouldn't. They were still out of that game.
So if Damian Swan has a bang up year last year, what would that have changed?
Nothing.
He still needs to come and perform this year.
He does.
He wasn't going to leave early.
No. He will probably still be it really depends on this year for sure, but I mean he'll probably be a top 2 to 3 round draft pick anyway.
I was thinking 3 to 4, but you know, 2 to 4 is pretty much the same.
Yeah.
In the NFL, but it really depends on what he does at the combine. But this guy, he's contributed, and I've heard that he's taken on a bigger leadership role.
I could see that from him. He's one of those guys that you kind of want him to take over, and when he does,
well, he's one of the few seniors in that defensive backfield.
Yes.
That is constantly changing. I mean,
like you said, they just put a running back at his natural position. He's back out of safety.
Yeah, and you know, like I said earlier, with the returning starters, I can't tell you who the returning starters are because I don't even think the coaches know who's going to start. I mean, you got Wilkerson, who was slated to start last year as a true freshman, blew his knee out.
Right.
And I've been talking about him. I talked about him all last year. But he hadn't played a snap yet.
No.
He might get time. You got, like you said, J.J. Green. He's a little bit on the short side.
We won't talk about people that have been dismissed or left for whatever reasons.
Good luck to him.
Luckily, right at the time that happened, we were talking about the teams they went to, or we were able to mention them. So, you know, good luck to them.
Yeah.
But you're not a part of this program anymore, and to me, you were trying to take the cheap way out. So, you know, enjoy that.
Yeah, you know, they want to go to where that's allowed.
Right.
If you want to get high, get high. Go get high.
Yeah.
Sheldon Dawson made some plays last year. Not a lot. Not a lot of plays were made on the defense. There were -7 turnovers for the year. So not a lot of plays were made on the defense as far as taking the ball away. So there's not going to be anything that people remember other than the ball tipping the air against Auburn.
Right.
And neither one of those two fellows involved in that play are on the team anymore. Like I said, Reggie Wilkerson, I'm a big fan of his. I really have no reason to be a fan of his other than my gut. Corey Moore is going to start at safety. I mean, he's another one of those seniors. Him and Damian Swan are really going to contribute. Aaron Davis, I've heard a lot of good things. He's a walk-on. That term walk-on might have a Rudy connotation to it, but this
guy's not going to make one special teams play at Notre Dame. This guy's going to contribute all year long.
Rudy got a sack.
I don't know. Joe Montana tells a different story, and he was there when that happened. But that is another day on that.
I believe Joe.
I believe Joe Montana on that story.
Yeah, but Aaron Davis, I mean,
yeah,
he performed very well in high school.
It's hard enough to make a team as far as being recruited in, but this guy walked on and said, hey, by the way, I'm going to play, and then earned his spot.
The reason why he didn't get a scholarship, he blew his knee out as a junior, blew his knee out as a senior.
Same knee?
No.
Okay.
So they're not going to give you a
scholarship. I'm not worried about that. The way modern medicine is, I'm not worried about
it. He still made it happen. I mean, he has hand skills. He caught balls in high school. 4.5 GPA. I mean, I don't know if that amounts to a hill of beans. He's a 20-year-old freshman, so he's going to have some maturity on him. And like I said, sources say that this guy, he's going to be out there. You're going to see number 35. He'll probably change numbers before the season starts.
They swap numbers so much.
Another guy I left off speaking about, we were talking about all the linebackers, Ray Drew. He's a part of this the dream team, so to speak.
Isaiah
Crowell.
You know, typically they like to put him a defensive end, but they're going to actually let him stand up a little bit.
No, I was saying we spoke about linebackers earlier, and now we spoke about defensive backs.
Okay.
We'll get to the defensive line. Ray Drew,
Yeah, we can't forget these guys.
Injury riddled season. Part of the dream team. Still really hasn't done anything. I think I remember one sack or maybe one forced fumble.
Right. But once again,
he's wearing David Pollock's number. Come on.
Once again, when you have three guys up front and four linebackers, typically the front three are just supposed to be the distraction to the front five for the offense.
Yes.
To allow your backers and your corners and your safeties to blitz.
Correct.
Typically. Now, that being said, they have a nose tackle in John Taylor. Supposedly, he's very quick. Now, another guy who is very quick.
Hold on.
But had a nose tackle.
Oh, he's gone?
Yeah.
Wow.
Sorry. I thought that might be who you're going for. But yeah.
No, but...
The Scientology guy, right?
Yeah, the Scientology major, yeah.
Yeah,
He's not really, he's a sociology, but when you glance at the sheet very quickly, it looks like Scientology.
He, dismissed.
What's his substance related?
I really didn't even check in on it.
Okay.
I think it was a Pruitt decision.
Was it?
I don't think it was for lack of size.
Now, that's something we should bring up with Pruitt, is that Pruitt come in and said, as far as I'm concerned, there's 11 open spots on this defense. I want to see competition.
Right.
And he has not been afraid to sit starters and to bring guys who didn't even suit up onto the field.
Right. So, John Taylor is big.
You know, it's a big loss.
And he's also a large fella.
He is.
They have other large fellas, and they've been recruiting well.
Well, you know, would that mean that Chris Mays is going to take over that spot?
I mean, who knows?
Or would you pull Ray Drew right there?
No. Would not do that.
You want to keep him on the end?
I've seen his hand skills. I want bigger.
Well,
bigger.
The point I was making, whether it's John Taylor or not, and as quick as he is, your nose tackle needs to be more than a stature.
Well, yeah, they have to create the need to be double teamed.
Right. You need a Vince Wilfork-like quickness. And Vince Wilfork, as big as he is,
yeah,
and as much as he could probably put away two Christmas hands if he wanted to, the guy is very quick. He commands triple teams at times.
I like a Casey Hampton type, too.
Yes.
And Gilbert Brown.
Right.
Those are nose guards I think of in 3-4.
Right. And for what it's worth, Albert Haynesworth.
Yeah.
Back when he actually cared.
Yeah. Well, you signed him in our contract.
Yeah, I mean, you know, more power to him that he got a lot of money out of some people. But, you know, without Taylor, I still think they're going to be fine because I feel like they're pretty deep at the nose tackle.
They're gonna roll it through. They're going to probably
We're going to see an emergence on this defensive line of somebody we're probably not even mentioning.
They're probably going to roll through between 6 and 8 defensive linemen throughout the game.
Right.
So these guys we're mentioning now, I mean, we're not going to bore you with digging through the depth chart and coming up with the height and weight with everybody.
Right. We didn't talk about James Deloach or John Atkins, but for anybody that may be listening, they're fans of theirs, it's not that they're slouches. You know, Deloach moved from the outside linebacker spot, and he's going to do well in this scheme as well.
Right.
When he puts his hand in the dirt, he's going to make a difference.
But we're going with the known.
Right.
You know, we're going to produce content. We have to go with
right.
the known. We could talk fantasy college defensive lineman all we want.
It's a lot of fun talking, being in fantasy land, but, you know, in reality world.
So that, I mean, that takes care of the defense.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're going to move to the one phase of the game I bring up every time.
Yep.
Special teams.
And I will agree.
Special teams.
Especially with this team because they've had a history of having solid field goal kickers that sometimes have little mishaps.
Right. So
whether it's their fault or not, sometimes, you know, or even punters as well, sometimes when you shank a punt 10 yards to your left.
I want
to
stay with you all year.
Yeah.
Marshall Morgan. I think he missed a kick last year.
Yeah. He's pretty solid.
His freshman year, he missed 8 extra points. I couldn't get up and get a beer after the touchdown because I had to stay and watch the extra point. And sometimes it wouldn't be in the screen when he kicked it. He turned it around. That dude's solid. I got all the confidence in the world in that guy.
He is. Marshall Morgan is as solid now as Blair Walsh was once he hit the NFL.
You see that 70-yard field goal he hit?
No, I didn't see it.
In practice.
Did he hit one in practice?
Yeah, 70 yards.
I'll reach out to the sources and see what his
name
is.
Not Marshall.
Oh,
Blair Walsh.
Oh, yeah. He's a hell of a kicker. Just for some reason, when he had on the red, white, and black, he just couldn't hit.
He couldn't get it
between the poles.
His senior year, though.
Yeah, he's a hell of a kicker.
And so at punter,
yeah,
they've got, a lot of teams don't have this, they got two punters.
They do.
Colin Barber has time. He struggled a little bit last year.
It helped. It didn't help when he really took a hit that I felt bad for him when he got hit. He took a shot.
Yeah.
And it happens. As a punter, and I know I explained to his mother that this typically doesn't happen because I happen to be beside her in a game. And shout out if she's listening. You guys are pretty cool, especially to chat with. But, man, sometimes it happens. And you just can't do nothing but just look at it and go, are you okay?
Yeah.
It's not a football thing at this point. Are you okay?
Yeah. Can you walk?
How many of me do you see right now?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, come sit right here.
Yeah. So, punter, some people call it a throwaway position. It plays a lot.
Yes.
It plays a big, big deal. You're punting 5 to 6 times a game. Hopefully, no more than that. And you could really, really change field position. So, the kicking game, I'm fairly confident that there's not going to be a big fall off on that.
No, I think it'll actually get better.
So, the other part of the kicking game, the return game, return game, return game, return game. I'm sure that this Bulldog team is so sick of hearing the word return game. No one's told me this.
Probably return to glory as well. They're sick of hearing.
Return game, return game, return game. Last year, punt returns, they averaged 2.9 yards per punt return. They had 73 yards on punt returns last year. 73.
Total?
For the year.
Wow.
2.9 per return. Needless to say, that was the worst in the conference.
Yeah, I would imagine it would be.
Kick returns, 18.6 yards per return. So you got
to
think.
In college, I mean, it's a lot easier to run one back in college. That's why that's.
They moved it up.
Yeah.
So they're catching it in the end zone.
Mm-hmm.
So he's catching it 3 yards deep.
Right.
And then running it out 18 yards. They're starting
at the 15.
Every stinking time.
Let it go through the end zone
and
get 20.
That's going to contribute. That's 25, actually.
Yeah.
That's going to contribute to the 65th in rushing. And that's going to contribute to third and longs. So, why do I bring this up? My X factor. This might be a lot of pressure. Maybe he doesn't give two flying hamburgers about what I have to say. Isaiah McKenzie, the human joystick. I think that was Dante Hall's name. They might just call him Joystick. I'm pretty sure it's just Joystick.
He can be the robot Joystick if you want.
Well, he is going to make the difference. Now, this is actual evidence, and you know, I've looked at this. They've been trying out people catching punts, returning kicks, and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Isaiah has pretty much came in and said, "This is my job." Now he went to school with Sony Michel, and that's probably a big reason. Sony probably helped bring him in and help recruit him to the school. But Isaiah McKenzie, he is the X factor. There's going to be a lot of hidden yards that they lost out on by not catching the punt, by even running it out of the end zone.
He's a little short guy, too. He can run under people.
Oh, yes. He is...
What did I say, 5'8"?
Yeah.
And if he's listed at 5'8", you know, once again, I brought up that Johnny Manziel was listed up to 6'2 at one point in college.
Yes.
He's 5'9 or 5'10". So, I mean, just because you're listed at 5'8", this guy could be 5'6". He could be 5'10".
Right.
But either way, he's small.
I like his... He had the nickname in high school. And he got to Georgia... They hadn't changed the nickname. So that is the big X factor. All those 2.9 yards of punt return, terrible field position to start every time. So on the kick returns, terrible field position to start. It puts the offense at a disadvantage, which then, when the offense punts, puts the defense at a disadvantage, and you're giving up more points and more yards because you're playing on your heels, trying not to give up the big play when they're so close. I mean, this McKenzie guy, I mean, you can go deep into his numbers in high school and just see, I mean, 40 catches for 892 yards, 7 touchdowns. Sounds like a decent year for... Then you look in, he ran the ball 22 times and scored another 7 touchdowns on 22 carries. So that's, yeah. My math isn't too great, does it? once every three times he carries the ball, and then if you add that to once every six times he catches the ball, he's in the end zone. And he's the kind of explosive Dave Meggett type, although I don't think Dave Meggett did much of anything in college.
I don't think he did either.
I'm trying to think of another return specialist like that. Who was that punt return guy? He had like six punt returns in college. Like a DeAnthony Thomas.
Yeah.
Let's call him like DeAnthony. That's the feeling I get with him. And, you know, I mean, even these other freshman running backs that we spoke about, they might be able to contribute in the return game as well. And that's what they need. I mean, they were missing a third of their game last year. They did great on kicks. Punts, good. Kicks through the uprights, good. But when you're missing out on, like, each return, it's just you catch it and that's that. You're basically losing yards. So it really you're playing behind the eight ball from the word go. And, you know, we can get into the quarterback depth. They got a great guy from Goose Creek, Jacob Park.
Yeah.
Big, big, big arm. And I think we've seen some other people that have declared or committed. We know it doesn't matter yet. We've got the Mountain from here in Georgia, 15, 16-year-old behemoth.
Is he the Mountain that blocks or is he the Mountain that rushes?
He's the Mountain that blocks.
Okay.
I've heard
they did it again twice, so I just want
to... Yeah, the Mountain that rushes, he's a little bit... The Mountain that blocks, he's 2 years out. The Mountain that rushes, he's next year.
And for anybody who doesn't get these references, you should either read or watch Game of Thrones. You'll know exactly what we're talking about.
Well, just go on YouTube and look at Mountain versus the Viper, and that's all you need to see.
Yeah, there you go. And viewer discretion is advised on that.
You'll see it coming.
But, yeah.
And they've got a super stud quarterback that signed that is declared along with the Mountain that blocks for another 2 years. So, depth-wise, they're stacking it up. And I really don't think Jeremy Pruitt's going to be there long.
I think he's going to be a head coach somewhere.
3 to 4 years he might be there.
Maybe not that long. I say 2 to 3. But
and
dog fans, don't consider this a knock on you or nothing like that. You're not the stepping stone. It's just coincidental because this guy's on his way to be a head coach, and Rick was able to convince him to wait a couple of years.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's not a knock on Pruitt. Hell, he was just in high school like 6 years ago coaching. So, you know, that's not a knock on him at all. Let's see, actually, how many years ago was it? 06, he was defensive coordinator at Hoover, Alabama High School.
I've actually been through Hoover. It's a nice place.
Isn't that where the SEC Media Days was recently?
I believe so.
I think we were trying to figure out where the heck Hoover was.
It is, because we made a lot of vacuum references.
Yes. In 07, he went to Alabama to become director of player development. So just think, from 07 to now, he's won, I'm counting, 3 championships. I might be wrong. He hadn't won them. He's been a part of them, obviously. So, like you said, this is no stepping stone.
Right.
But you really have to be realistic with your expectations.
Right.
He won't be here any longer than Sonny Michel will be.
Right.
So this freshman class coming in, and he's going to recruit his butt off, and he's really going to bring. He's already starting it.
I mean, he's quite good at recruiting. Actually,
you see this fella Thompson, number 3 player in the country. Some people say number 1 player in the state. He has chosen to come to Georgia, which, hey, that's more great.
Well, and what I was scrambling to look up a while ago. Special teams always comes down to kicking and punting and returning and stuff like that. But to me, as important as a center is most of the time, the long snapper is going to have a lot to do with this kicking game.
You're
now,
right.
A lot of people would say, well, who is the long snapper? Well, his last name is Theus, but he's not John the offensive tackle. He's his brother, Nathan Theus, who actually did this last year. And actually the backup is Trent Fricks as well. Both of these guys have done this for a while.
Really?
They're quite good at long snapping, because there's a whole new art to it.
a lot of people don't realize that, you know, like the backup long snapper in Minnesota years ago used to be Jared Allen.
Yeah.
A lot of people didn't realize he could long snap. There's an art to it. It's not the same as playing center.
Oh, no, I used to snap when I played.
Yeah. It's quite a different animal. But with Nathan Theus, you know, who could see time on the offensive line as well, like his brother.
Yeah.
But he is the long snapper until proven otherwise. Now, there was kind of an open competition at one point, but he proved that he is the superior over Trent Fricks. But if the kick, you know, in order to kick it, the ball has to go somewhere near their feet.
Yeah.
So you need to make sure your long snapper can pinpoint that every time.
Certainly.
And I think they're not going to have the problem there. I think if something goes wrong on a kick, it's more than likely going to be the line not holding as opposed to the long snapper or the actual kicker.
Right.
But just want to throw him in, you know, because John gets talked about a lot, but not Nathan. And I actually tend to side the long snappers that it's usually not their fault.
Yeah, I mean, they do have a tough job. I mean, I got to admit that.
But, you know, let's jump into this schedule. And we could talk all day about what happened last year, what didn't happen last year, or, you know, how it could have played one way or the other. But they play some tough teams this year. I told you that I'd come up with, as of this morning, as I looked at it, for the final time before we got here today, that I saw 3 coin flip games, and I saw the other 9 as wins. And so if I give the coin flips as losses, that's 9-3. That's an improvement of last year. But I feel like at least one of these coin flips are going to be wins. So they could have 10 wins this year.
Yeah, that's...
it's possible.
That's what I have as the most likely.
Yeah.
It's 10-2 with a loss to South Carolina and to either Florida or Auburn. Now, nobody jump my bones, or jump on my back to my bones is a different connotation.
It is.
No one jump on my back about the Florida comment, but everybody who knows, you don't beat Florida until you beat Florida. It's no given.
Sure.
They should have waxed Florida the past couple of years. I know they beat them 3 times in a row.
4 now, right? They're going on the 5th? Did I get that right?
No, they lost Aaron Murray's freshman year.
Did they?
Yeah, in overtime. They did.
Okay. Oh, yeah, 3 in a row. Okay.
I actually have worst-case scenario of 8-4.
Okay.
Losing to Clemson and South Carolina, and then Florida and Auburn. Which makes the middle of the season kind of exciting for Georgia fans.
Yeah.
And the beginning of the season, now we've seen them in recent history start out 0-2 and then rip off 10 wins in a row.
Right, but I think they're going to be, I think they're 1-1 when they see Troy in Athens. So.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of these teams, now Tennessee's going to be coming in mad. Tennessee
yes.
should have won that game last year.
Yes, they should have.
They had the game won, so that's no slouch.
And on the flip side, the very next week, Vanderbilt's going to come in overly joyed.
Yes,
they're going to feel like we did this last year, we can do this again, and yikes, they're going to.
Yeah, Derek Mason, he's apparently he's making good headway. Could be a great head coach. You're still a Vanderbilt, so
yeah.
At Missouri.
I see Missouri as a tough team. They're one of the coin flips that I come up with Auburn and South Carolina being the other ones. But at the same time, I feel like UGA has the advantage against Missouri.
Well, they're not going to be as light in the loafers this year, so to speak.
Right.
They're Missouri.
They're going to see them coming.
They might.
Where before, they're like, you know, we're not real familiar with these guys.
No, just Missouri is not going to be as light in the loafers or, you know, ready to, you know, bang them from behind, so to speak. There's going to be a certain element missing from that team.
I see where you're going with this.
So,
yes.
So
the co-defensive SEC player of the year.
Yeah.
Okay.
He destroyed them last year.
Yeah, he did.
But, I mean, that he was the difference. Also, a double fake double reverse on 3rd and 1 from your own 18 kind of contributes to that as well. But that's
going
to really add to your anti-Bobo stance or... not as pro Bobo, but if you say pro Bobo, it kind of gets.
Yeah, you kind of. It's one of those say that a few times fast.
Yeah, but no, I mean that was the worst play call of the year, and that really set.
Hey, but if you're gonna say that's the worst, then I'm okay calling that a successful play call in season because When his lows was low, they were low, but there weren't that many that were that bad.
Yeah, but that sealed the deal on that.
Oh, yeah, it cost you a game, but,
yeah.
You know, you can't say that one play would define his season, and that's what I'm saying.
Well, I'm going to add on to that.
Okay.
I've been watching Georgia for a long time now. Since Rick got there, their trick play is the play action, the quarterback walks like he doesn't even have the ball, puts it behind his back.
The Statue of Liberty to a point.
That's something similar to that, which they've had success with when they do it. They decided to add two fake reverses to it. For the first time I've ever seen it.
I can already see this year's Christmas card I sent you is going to have a video of this play in it.
Yeah, so nonetheless, I remember the play. Missouri, they're going to be down. They lost their starting quarterback, even though the backup was very, very good. They lost Beckham Green. He's gone.
Right.
They lost their other top receiver. They lost their top defensive player in Sam.
Yep.
They lost, I want to say someone else they lost too.
They lost a good handful of their team, honestly.
Yeah, but if we would have done a Missouri show, we would be able to
know
more. Okay, so I don't think, at Missouri, I know I'm looking at them right here, it says they were 12-2. That's kind of a hinky number. I really don't think that
they caught lightning in a bottle last year.
Yeah, they sure did. You know, good for them. It's better than South Carolina winning it, if you ask me. And then, you got
Arkansas next
yeah,
week.
Yeah, Texas, Arkansas, Kansas. They're still struggling to find their way. It's at Arkansas, so you can't.
But they're slowly turning around, and they're building it the right way, but they're still a year or so out from making a change.
Yeah, Pixie-wee, they'll have to wait on that. Then you got the cocktail party. That's the coin flip for me. I don't care if Florida was 0-12 last year. It really doesn't matter. I've seen Georgia go in there with NFL talent at every position and get beat 17-16.
Yeah, and get embarrassed.
So, at Kentucky,
Kentucky's another one that they're considered a bottom feeder in the SEC, and in other divisions they might be, you know, middle of the pack or even better. They're building their program as well, but it's taken them a couple years
I don't think Stoops is going
to
stick around long enough to make it happen.
No, he's not. It's going to be, he's turned it over to somebody else. We don't know who yet.
Yeah, he'll love it. Auburn.
I'm not saying this because Auburn did so well last year, and, you know, they don't want to get caught with the miracle play like they did last year as well, but I feel like Auburn is better physically, as we've said in the previous podcast. They're not as lucky this year, but they're better physically, and I feel like matchup-wise, if UGA is going to lose late in the season, then Auburn is it.
Yeah.
I feel like they can beat Florida, but I feel like if they're going to lose, Auburn's it.
Oh, certainly. I mean, because I keep saying Auburn's going to have a down year, but hell, a down year could be 10-4.
Yeah. Instead of 12-2 like they were.
So, that's really, I guess that would be 9-4, because they wouldn't have the extra an extra win. But nonetheless, it wouldn't be that far off. It'd still be a successful season, considering two seasons ago they didn't have a conference victory.
Correct.
Or do they just have one? Charleston Southern, we know about that. I mean, they did have 10 wins.
But who do they play? I mean, are they in the same? I mean, they're kind of in the same boat with Boise State. You know, who do you play? It's great that you win 10 games, but who do you play?
Right. So Georgia is playing five teams that won 10 games last year or more.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the most out of any of the teams we reviewed.
And I would say two of those may actually win 10 games again this year.
Yeah. And then you got Georgia Tech. You really can't. The Georgia Tech and Auburn.
You never know, because sometimes Georgia Tech comes out of the blocks really making a charge, and then sometimes I think they're still playing Halo tournaments.
Well,
I don't understand
last
it.
Last year they got up 20-0 against Georgia.
And then went home.
Well, see, the first two games of the year, they pretty much all been set up game plan wise. They've been looking at those. The Florida, Auburn, and Georgia Tech game. Those are the emotional, the big rivalries. The play them every year. This, I know they've had the Cox every year too, but they've been losing to South Carolina and still winning the East. So I don't think they put as much weight on that game as they probably could. I mean, at South Carolina, they've won 18 home games in a row. That's really nowhere you just stroll into.
Right. Spurrier's always going to bring it.
Oh, yeah, it's really just the mentality. So like I said, 10-2 is what I feel will happen. 11-1 is max. They're probably 11-1 with losing to South Carolina or losing to Auburn, and that would put them in Atlanta.
It would. But, you know, as we said on the previous show, and this is no knock on any of the other teams, if you're an SEC fan, Alabama's your shot for that 14 playoff.
Unless you beat them. If they go 11-1 and beat Alabama, they'll be in. You don't think so?
The only reason I hesitate, and it's hard to do anything but ride the fence on that, is the way the national media and the types of people that'll make that decision always kind of downplay Atlanta sports in general. They never get the coverage. They never get the benefit of the doubt.
Well, what's the point of the playoff system then?
That's a good point. I think it should have been 8. In a couple years, it'll be 8 anyway. But, I mean, I seriously see for some goofy...
I think it should be 6.
I seriously see for some goofy reason that if Georgia were to win the SEC, that they're the number 5 team.
No, if they go in there 10-2 and win it, I don't think that
they... No, if they go 11-1, which I don't see them at, but it could happen.
No,
I mean, who knows?
This is all best-case scenario, I'm saying.
Right.
If they go 11-1...
If they're 11-1 and they beat Alabama or Auburn or LSU...
Or Ole Miss.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, they're back. But
they'll be in there. If they go 10-2 and win the conference, I really can't disparage it because I know Ohio State will be undefeated.
I don't know.
I know Oklahoma will probably be undefeated.
I think what it'll really hinge on, as far as if that scenario plays out, whether it's Alabama or UGA, if they win with one loss, they win the SEC with one loss, I really think it'll hinge on how the Pac-12 played out.
Yeah.
Because if you have an undefeated team in the Pac-12 who beat another undefeated team to give them one loss, I still feel like the national media could give them both a nod.
Yeah, but... I mean, think if Michigan State beats Oregon when they travel up there.
True.
And then Oregon runs the table in the Pac-12.
I mean, there you go, SEC fans. You want to know who to pull for this year? Big Ten teams, because they're going to be able to knock off the other guys and allow the SEC to walk into this playoff.
You pull for Oklahoma State, too, if you want to.
You can.
Week 1.
Nebraska, Wisconsin.
I know that Oklahoma State's not Big Ten, but they've got FSU Week 1.
Mm-hmm. They can really alter all this.
And Wisconsin, who they got? LSU Week 1? Yeah, we talked about that.
I believe so. Nebraska's thrown in there somewhere, too. I think they got South Carolina or somebody.
Right around there, I believe.
Yeah. I mean...
And I didn't mention this. Not you said South Carolina. I don't want to get past this. Georgia plays August 30th against Clemson. Then they take a week off.
They do.
And get to prepare for South Carolina. One of the... big things that's aggravated me about this Georgia-South Carolina rivalry in the past few years, I don't know if you've noticed, South Carolina starts their season on Thursday.
They do.
First game of the year on Thursday, every year. What's that equal?
A lot more time to prepare.
That equals another 2 to 3 days rest, while Georgia has been playing. Now, I know last year they didn't start off. Well, no, last year they did. The past few years they've been starting, I'm saying the quality of opponent.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they've been playing Boise.
I mean, they have a BCS
schedule. Oklahoma State.
In a non-BCS year.
Yeah, Oklahoma State. This year they got Clemson again. So, I don't want to say that was an advantage and that's why they beat them or anything. But, I mean, South Carolina has to play the East Carolina after A&M. Now, they won 10 games. Who knows who they played. But it's not just... You can't just throw your towel out there and game over.
Right.
And, you know, East Carolina would love nothing more than to beat South Carolina. And so say they, you know, let's monkey wrench this playoff system even more. Say East Carolina beats South Carolina.
Yeah.
And then South Carolina doesn't lose a game in the conference. Are they going to get in those playoffs?
Well, it's going to come down to people like Archie Manning and Condoleezza Rice on that.
A lot of people have been, they've got a recusal process set up for people that won't be able to vote. Now, I don't know if Condoleezza will still be able to vote. I don't know if Archie will be able to. I mean, I guess he won't be able to if Ole Miss gets into it. But
well, there's certain things, but, you know.
They said it was a new thing this week.
You're tied to a...
Yeah, they've had a recusal.
Because there's some athletic
process.
Directors on this thing, you know, like I think Wisconsin.
Tom Osborne.
Yeah, I think a couple
Barry
of those
Alvarez.
Guys are on there. I don't have the list in front of me. It's around here somewhere. But
There's other guys that don't belong there either, too.
But it was so that certain conferences were represented. Now, clearly, there's the Big Five conferences.
What about Conference USA?
What about them? I mean, Chuck Oliver's not here to tell us about it, so. I mean, and I would love to sit down and talk Conference USA with him.
I'm just saying,
absolutely.
How are they ever going to get in the national championship?
If the Power Five secede from the NCAA? And it could happen. I mean, this rumor's going on, and it gains more and more momentum every day. Will it actually happen? No. This is not like, you know, oh, let's not be a state in the United States anymore. No, this is just we think we can make more money, so
yeah.
We're going to pressure the NCAA.
It's not going to happen.
It's a leverage play.
And I even heard, who did I hear? Some coach. It might have been June Jones. Said, all right.
They have their national champion. We have ours, and then we play.
More money.
Won't ever happen. Who are they going to play if they secede? Just the Big Five plays each other?
Yeah. Why not?
That would be some good matchups.
Yeah. Because the Big Five are the most popular teams.
No, I'm just saying. We'd have Ohio State playing Tennessee week two. There's no more of these cupcakes to throw in there.
Well, I don't know. Nothing personal, but that would be a cupcake for Ohio State right now.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know,
I have zero respect for Ohio State, though.
Not a big fan of theirs, but that's I could probably do a
it's an Urban Meyer thing with me.
I could do a 24-hour show.
It's really not a program thing. It's just an Urban Meyer thing. And I never liked Jim Tressel. I never liked John.
See, I never liked him either. And it's their style and stuff. And that's I like their program. I just don't like how it was ran.
I agree.
But you know, once again, I'm not a USC fan as well. But Pete Carroll's a good guy.
Oh, Pete Carroll kicked ass at USC. I like him at USC.
Well, successful in the stuff he did, for sure. But, you know, I'm just not a USC fan. And it's because, you know, back in high school, it was like forced on top of us at that time that you know, USC, USC, USC. And you're like, hey, there's like a million other places.
And I really don't like that they claim a national title that they didn't win.
That's a whole other debate as to how many national titles your school has and how many
how many
they claim and how many they actually have or how many they didn't claim.
It was the one Saban won while he was at LSU when they beat Oklahoma.
Oh, yeah.
USC said they won that title. I think because they got the AP vote, but it's not an AP national championship. Mm-hmm. It's a BCS championship.
But to bring it all full circle, UGA is I'm not going to say due, because we said that with LSU, but UGA is going to look more solid this year than they did last year. To have the misfit band of toys that hadn't played with each other as they did last year, they've all played with each other now.
Right. I think the maintain on offense, vastly improve on defense. Now you have to think now, there were 78 total of defense.
Hope Pruitt changes that.
Well, no, he will. Vastly improved could be 45.
Yeah.
So it's still not, well, it might have been
even different than that. I might have my numbers screwed up on that. I know there's 70-something. That might have been against the pass. But nonetheless, if you were 40th one year, you improved to 15th, you're still not top 10, but that's a huge improvement.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at them, though, a defense that was 50th last year, that's 45th this year, a lot of people go, well, it's only five spots. Yeah, but five spots could have been, 100 points.
Yeah, they were 45th last year, sorry. So if they improve, they were 78. Scoring, the important stat, as Buck Ballou would say. I don't care about yardage. I want to know what they score. So 78th in scoring, you bump that up to 45th. You're not going to, obviously, I mean, it's all apple.
Basically, though, dog fans, be excited. This is a team to really be excited about.
Yeah, you're gonna have.
I think they're more exciting than last year's team.
Yeah.
Even though there's still a couple question marks, but they're easy to overcome in case they don't.
And last year's team, I think, was just false hope. It was just blind faith.
I would agree with that.
And Pruitt really turned around. He's a lot less DBs standing with their arms in the air.
Be excited, and next time somebody asks how about those dogs, you can say, we're supposed to play Alabama next week.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm going to go with that. I think that's going to be my pick. I think they're going to win the East, and Alabama's going to have the West, and we're going to have the SEC championship game that we should have had.
that blocked field goal.
All goes back to, what was those famous five words I said? Funny how things work out.
That's true.
But for Mr. Joe Pym, I am Jeremy York. We'll see you guys in a couple weeks for the inaugural season SEC show.
Yes, mid-season analysis. Can't call it a wrap-up.
Regardless, the season will have either started or about to start, and we'll tell you about all the funness that's coming up.
Correct.
Funness is a word. Look it up. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening.